Parshas Lech Lecha. Unfortunately, I made copies, and then I thought I had them here, and I only have one copy. But we'll manage reading it outside, and you could all share one copy. I'm sorry. So we're going to talk today about Avraham's early youth. We all know that there's a remarkable omission from the text of the Torah. Parshas Lech Lecha begins with that nevuah took place when Avram was 75 years old, maybe a little earlier, maybe not. But Avram was already an old man, and we know nothing about his youth in the text of the Torah. The Midrashim, on the other hand, fill in many of the details, how when he was very young, he independently discovered God, he was Moser Nefesh, there are some contradictions, was he 3, was he 40? Some of the contradictions are resolved by the Rambam and others. And another time, we talked about why is it that the Torah omits these important details of his life. The Ramban says because it relates to Avodah Zarah, v'tano sehem. The Torah doesn't always want to be marach when discussing issues of Avodah Zarah. The Maral gives a beautiful explanation that it's to show us that the Bechira of Kal Yisrael and Avram wasn't because of the things that he did, but for some inscrutable reason that goes beyond who he was, and therefore the Bechira of Klal Yisrael goes beyond any particular reason. And tonight we won't get into that topic. I want to just go into an interesting prat, which I think an important methodological point in terms of learning Medrash. And this could be found when looking at the Ramban, when he describes this story and how it actually happened. And the Ramban is in two places. One is in our parsha, in Parshas Lech Lecha, but it's a little bit more in detail, so we'll read it from there at the end of Parshas Noach. So the Ramban, it's the first source, the Ramban says as follows. This is in the Perkut Aleph Pasuk Chaf Ches. I apologize, I didn't. So the Ramban says as follows. V'ha'inyan shekiblu rabosenu b'zehu emes, v'ani meva'eroso. Avram avilu lo nolad b'eretz kazdim. The Ramban has a disagreement with Rashi. There's some unclarity about where Avram was from originally. So Rashi understands he was from Or Kazdim, and then he went to Haran, and then from Haran he went to Eretz Yisrael. The problem is that he's told when leaving from Haran to leave the place of his birth, but Haran wasn't the place of his birth. Another problem is that Avram tells Eliezer to go back to my hometown, my birthplace, and Eliezer goes to Haran, not to Or Kazdim. So the Ramban understands that Avram was really from Haran, and he had gone to Or Kazdim, and then he went back and went to Eretz Yisrael. Also not our issue now.
There also is a translated word, well, that is not birthplace, but clan.
So that might be a possible solution. V'ha'inyan ha'mekubal hazeh nimtza gam kein b'sefer kadmoni. So the Ramban then goes and tells the story of Avram in Or Kazdim, and he relates the famous Medrash, which states that Avram was teaching his monotheistic beliefs, and this was against the law. The king arrested him, threw him into a fiery furnace, and he was miraculously saved from the fiery furnace. And this medrash, we all know, it's quoted in Rashi and the like. And the Ramban says that, very fascinatingly, this Kabbalah also appears in non-Jewish sources as well. In other words, it's not just a Jewish account. It appears in the book, a book called The Nabataean Agriculture, or Kitab al-Falaha al-Nabatiya. It's a treatise on agriculture and superstition that's based on ancient Babylonian sources. It was translated from the original Babylonian Aramaic by Ibn Washia, a 10th century Iraqi alchemist. I think this is... a Sefer Avodah Zarah, basically. And this records a story as well. It's not just in the Medrash. We know it from non-Jewish sources as well. And what does it say over there? Kimo shekasav harav mor nevuchim. First of all, the Rambam found it. He was the big expert in Sefer Avodah Zarah. Ki his kiro b'sefer avodas ha'ach arim ha'mitzrim ki Avram asher nolad b'kuta chalak al dasa hamon shehayu ovdim hashemesh v'nasan ha'melech oso b'veis ha'sohar v'haya imahem b'toch achos yamim rabim sham. So same idea as the Medrash, that Avram was preaching his monotheism and he was imprisoned. However, there's a little difference. In the Nabataean agriculture, it says that he was imprisoned, he was incarcerated for a long time. Achar kach pachad hamelech sheyashchis alav arzo, the yasir b'nei ha'adam me'emunasam. But the king was afraid to keep him here. He might cause people to lose faith in the king and in his beliefs, follow monotheism. Right, the belief in God undermined the legitimacy of many of the ancient monarchs whose power stemmed from their claims that they were somehow a deity or close to the deity. And therefore, the king didn't want him here. V'gireish oso el k'tzei eretz kina'an achar shelakach kohono. So the king expelled him after taking all his money and threw him out. So we have two versions of the story. In one version, the Medrash, Avram was miraculously saved from the burning furnace. In the other version of the story, in the Nabataean agriculture, Avram was incarcerated and later released. V'hine, al kol panim, b'makom ahu, b'eretz kastim, nasa nes l'Avram avinu. Either way, though, there was a nes. O nes nistar, shenasan b'lev oso amelech l'hatzilo, v'lo yamisenu. In the Abatean version of the story, it was an ace nister. What was an ace nister? Normally, a king would execute such a person. Kings were not particularly benevolent or fair in those days. If a king thought that you were a threat, he would simply kill you. He had nothing to fear from Avram. And therefore, the normal protocol would have been execution, and instead, he decides to let him go, though he exiles him and takes all his money. Oh, nes meforsam, sheshlichu lekivshan ha'esh, v'nitzal k'divrei Rabbeinu. Where it was a nes meforsam, namely that he was saved from the fiery furnace. So the Ramban presents these two options. And he doesn't seem to actually have a preference. He says, well, one of two things happen. Really, the two stories are more similar than they are different. In both stories, Avram preached monotheism. In both stories, he got into trouble with the government. In both stories, he was saved. There's a minor difference. In one case, it was a nes nistar. In one case, it was a nes nigla. The Ramban doesn't feel any need to reconcile the two versions. He doesn't seem to think that, he doesn't present it in a way that one is definitively correct and one isn't. And likewise, in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Lech Lecha, when the Ramban presents this, refers back to this, he says two options. Again, he said either he was saved, it was an ace nister, or an ace nigla. And this is, I think, an important, as I said, an important methodological point in terms of dealing with midrashim. A lot of times my students have asked me, when studying Chumash and studying midrashim, they say, well, what actually happened? You know, the midrashim present stories. Sometimes those stories, one issue with the stories is that they sometimes are very, very unlikely occurrences, huge miracles and the like. That's one issue. Another time we discussed the Rambam's position that when you have Midrashim or Agada that's either philosophically problematic or scientifically problematic, you shouldn't understand it literally. But even leaving aside the issues of whether it's meant to be understood literally or not in cases when there are problems with science and philosophy, here there's not really a problem with the Medrash, meaning to say it's a nes. We believe in nisim. So it's not really that there's any problem. And nevertheless, the Ramban sort of leaves it open. He presents both views. He says, interestingly enough, a little after this text quoted, he says, we shouldn't be troubled by the Medrash, because if the pshat is, like it says in the Nabataean agriculture, so why isn't it in the Torah? It's because the Torah frequently doesn't record nisim nistarim. This is a yesod that the Ramban has in many places. one of his famous places is where he discusses the story of the birth of Yocheved. And Chazal, of course, said that she was Nolda Beina Chomos. The Ibn Ezra says that if that were the case, it's a nes, and Atar should have mentioned the nes. And the Ramban's answer basically is that she bore Moshe at 130.
Oh, you don't, not, oh.
Not the nes of her birth.
Oh,
but if her birth was Beina Chomos, so then there was a different nes that should have been highlighted. Well, the Torah says she bore in Moshe, it doesn't make a big deal out of it. The Ramban, the Ibn Ezra says, well, look how big of a deal the Torah made when Sarah gave birth at 90, and here Yocheved gave birth at 130, and nothing is mentioned. The Ramban there says, no, it's a nes nister. Why it's a nes nister, he discusses, relates to his general theory of what's the definition of nes nister, not for now. But he says, you shouldn't be surprised that nisim nistarim aren't mentioned in the Torah, because the Torah very frequently leaves out nisim nistar. Meaning to say, we shouldn't expect that every detail of history to be recorded in the Torah. Many things happen that aren't in the Torah. The Torah really tells us very little in terms of, you know, the life of Avram is probably discussed more than anybody else in the whole Torah, except maybe Moshe, right, in terms of the, how much we know of his life. And even him, we only have, you know, 8 or 10 stories. So we shouldn't be surprised about details missing. So if it was a Nes Nister, since it was a Nes Nister, Nisim Nistarim are left out. If it was like Kedivrei Chazal, that it was a nes nigla, so then you shouldn't be surprised that it's not recorded in the Nabataean agriculture, because that would undermine their faith. So obviously they're not going to record it as it actually happened. And why it's not in the Torah, so that relates to his theory that the Torah in general wants to leave out Avram's early history. Be that as it may, so what's very fascinating is the Ramban is willing to present these two options, and he doesn't feel any need to be machria as to what actually happened. Just a Maamar Musker, I just noticed this tonight. So the Rambam, as I said, mentions in the Mor Nevuchim also both the Medrash and the Nabataean version. If you look at how he records it in the Mishneh Torah, he writes, Kevan shegavar aleim b'rayos bikesh hamelech lahargo, nasa lo neis v'yatza l'charan. So if you understand it like the Ramban understood it, so he's not being machriya either. Be that as it may. So that's what the Ramban writes. And I was thinking that the Ramban really in a number of places does the same thing. Meaning to say, he presents various options as to what may have happened, and especially distinguishing between pshat and drash. And he doesn't feel a need to be machriya as to whatever happened, what actually happened. I'll give you two more examples, and then we'll talk about what this might mean. One other example, it's on your source sheets, is from Vayikra and Shmos. He says this idea many times. Maybe I'll just say it outside. When were the mitzvos given? When were the mitzvos given? Seems like an important question. So he says, well, if you look at Chazal, Chazal tell us that they were given at Har Sinai. Kolosen, Upratosen, Vidikdukem, Nemru, Lamoshe, Misinai. But if you look at the pshat of the psukim, it doesn't actually sound that way. If you want to take a look, pass me that chumash, please. So if you look, just one example of this, though there are many, in the first perek, pasuk of Vayikra. Vayikra Hashem el Moshe, Vaydaber Hashem elav, me'ol mo'ed le'mor. And then proceeds to teach us the mitzvos of Sefer Vayikra. Now, sounds like these mitzvos were given when? Ohel Moed. Ohel Moed took place after Moshe had descended from Har Sinai, when Moshe had his tent outside and the like. So, according to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the Ramban says that mitzvos were given at Ohel Moed, or at least some were given at Har Sinai, some were given at Ohel Moed. The Ramban here too, if you just take a look at your source sheets, doesn't feel a need to be machriya. He writes, Al derech rabosenu kol ki kol mitzvos nemru lemoshe behar Sinai klalosenu pratem v'diktukem v'nishnu be'ohel moed v'hine mitzvos vayikra shinuyos v'al derech hapshat shiro. This is how he reads this pasuk, but he has this in many places. Asher tziv Hashem es Moshe behar Sinai uliyom tzavasu es b'nei Yisrael b'midbar Sinai lahakriv es karbaneim l'Hashem. Meaning to say, what does that mean? Ki tziva b'miluim behar Sinai v'chein b'ola v'chatas v'tziva b'mincha v'ashem v'ziv chayashlamim b'midbar Sinai b'ohel moed. that according to the Pshat, some of the mitzvos and some of the karbanos were given in Har Sinai, namely those mentioned in Sefer Shmos, and some were given in Bamidbar Sinai or Ohel Moed, like the Asham and the Zivchei Shlamim Amiluim, Ola, Chatas, were at Har Sinai, and Tziva Mincha V'Asham V'Zivchei Shlamim B'Midbar Sinai. So, and according to that reading, basically, this first pasuk in Vayikra is talking about Shinuyos, if you learn like Chazal, if you learn like the Drash. In other words, these are repeated things. They were already said earlier. And if you learn like the Pshat, so these are new things. And again, the Ramban repeats this in a number of places in Tanakh, in his commentary. And he's not machriya. According to Pshat, this happened this way. According to Drash, it happened this way. Now, what actually happened? Right? When were the mitzvahs given? Were they given? So he doesn't tell you, and he doesn't seem to be bothered by the question. He just says, this way according to Pshat, this way according to Drash, very similar to what we saw in our parsha. What happened with Avram Avinu? There are two versions of the story. You might even argue that the Nabataean version more likely corresponds with Pshat, insofar as if it's more understandable why it would be missing from the text, though. He doesn't make that point explicitly. I'll give you one other place, Bekitzer, where you see this, though. There are many more. It's the Pasuk of Lo Sochlu Al Hadam. So, what does that mean? A very cryptic Pasuk. So, the Ramban in Vayikra, Perek Yotes, Pasuk Chavav, says, according to the Drash, it's referring to what? It basically means that... It means that you shouldn't eat after shechita while the animal is still moving and the like. And al peep shot, it means that it's some type of idolatrous practice, something related to necromancy and the like. Okay, so those are two pshatim. And he says that, for example, how you darshan it will depend on how you read the following pasuk in the book of Shmuel. The pasuk says, "Vayigidu l'Shaul le'mor, hine ha'am choteim l'Hashem lechol al hadam. Vayomer ba'gadetem golu elai hayom haven agdola." Right, that was after the big war with Yonasan and the like. So what does that mean? What happened? It says there the nation was ochlu al hadam. Well, what exactly did they do? So he says, well, according to Pshat, what they did was one thing, and according to Drash, what they did was another thing. If you follow the Drash, the nation sinned by eating meat after the animal was slaughtered before it died. And if you follow the Pshat, the nation sinned by doing some form of necromancy. And he brings textual support from the book of Shmuel for both of these positions. Again, he doesn't feel any need to tell us what actually happened. What happened? According to Pshat, this happened. According to Drash, that happened. So, as I said, I think if you look through the Parish of Ramban Alatar, you'll find other cases of this phenomenon. And the question is, what does this mean? What does this tell us? Obviously, the question of what actually happened is not one that bothered the Ramban. Now, that's not to say that the Ramban didn't care about Metzias. You could have just said, we don't care about Metzias. Metzias is not important at all. There's a Lashon that the Rambam uses, really based on the Gemara, that some understand, at least the Rambam is saying, is my dehave have, whatever happened, it doesn't matter. The Ramban does care about Metzias. I'll just give you one example, but you also see it in many places in the Torah. The Ramban goes ahead and discusses how is it, where was Kefer Rachel? So this is a fascinating Ramban, because the Ramban first tells you, gives one pshat, and he explains various psukim based off of that, and then he says, well, after I moved to Eretz Yisrael, I actually went to Kefer Rachel. This is in Vayishlach, in Perek Lamed Hei and Bereishis. And And then he gives his another interpretation. So he cares about the Metzias. It's not like the Ramban doesn't care about the Metzias. It doesn't say here my dehave have. So what's the pshat? What's the pshat? So maybe this is a bigger conversation that we could talk more about another time. But I think the Ramban understands that the words of the psukim are divrei Elokim Chaim. They're the words of Hashem, and they have to be understood as such. And that's why there's a value in studying pshat. And what is pshat? Pshat is understanding the psukim with the psukim alone, not with other tools. Maybe we'll consider stiros between psukim and the like, but basically using only the text as our guide. And the Ramban thinks that that's something that's very valuable to do, because that's the Dvar Hashem. And also, the words of Chazal are Dvar Hashem, and they're also Emes, and therefore we understand them on their own. And it doesn't really matter then what or how to deal with these contradictions, either between pshat and drash or between true midrashim, because our goal is not to figure out what happened, but rather, more than anything else, it's to understand the Torah's underlying message. If our goal was history, if that was the purpose of studying Chumash, to figure out what happened, so then we would obviously be very bothered by these types of contradictions, because I would say, okay, what happened? So you presented to me two different stories, two different versions, and if my goal is to find out what happens, I really need to know, so what happened? And I'll be very unsettled about the contradiction. But that's not the purpose of studying Torah. That's not to say it's unimportant and that it doesn't have a value or the like, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to learn the lessons of the Torah, and the Torah is understood on many levels, and one valuable lesson is pshat. One valuable layer is pshat. And therefore, we want to understand the Torah according to pshat, and that's valuable. And if the Torah according to pshat tells us that the mitzvos were given some at Sinai, some at Olmoed, so then that's what we have to understand. We have to understand it as such. And we also understand Chazal. And that's our goal. Then our goal is to understand the Midrashim, or to understand the Torah al-Pi Drash. And that too is very valuable. And if we do that, we'll understand the lessons of the Torah, the Pshat and the Drash. And what actually happened is not so much important. And this explains, not now, it's already late, why, first of all, the Ramban in many places goes ahead and focuses so much on Pshat, even when it comes to halachic sections. We've been talking about Pshat versus Drash in terms of the narrative. Even in terms of the halachic sections, where the Pshat is not lemaisa, because the halach always follows the Drash. The Ramban spends a lot of time explaining the pshat, even when it's keneged halacha. And he even goes ahead and gives you tamei hamitzvos al pi pshat, even though that's not how the halacha is actually practiced, because the halacha, the practice of the halacha follows drash. And the pshat is because it's Dvar Hashem, so we have to figure it out. And it's valuable. What happened? My dave ave. But that is, that's what we're trying to do when we study pshat. So I'll just tell you one postscript, which I'm still thinking about. But so I was thinking about talking about this today, and I was working on the shiur, and then somebody today asked me, I guess it's in the air, because it's Parshas Noach, asked me about the Epic of Gilgamesh. What do I have to say about that? So I don't want to get into the details and everything that I told the fellow, but. But it is very fascinating, because dealing with the story of the flood is presented in the Torah versus is presented in the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is a Sifrei Avodah Zarah, is very much very similar to dealing with the story of Noah, sorry, of Avram, as presented in the Nabataean agriculture versus is presented in the Medrash, meaning to say, the basic narrative in both versions are almost the same. Just like in our Parsha, we have Avram teaching monotheism, getting in trouble with the government and being saved. So too there, the basic story is the same. There was a flood, there was a teva, the world was destroyed in the flood. There was a sacrifice afterwards. It says Reach Nichoach in both cases. In both cases, the flood, the teva was very big. Different dimensions. But the basics of the story are the same. But there are a number of very important details in the differences of the story. So, for example, is it God versus gods? Right? In the Torah, it's God. There, it's gods. In the epic, they're fighting with each other, and they sort of lose control over the flood, and all sorts of other differences. The karbanos at the end are very different. In Noach, it says, Hashem smelled the Reach Nichoch over there. It's clear that the gods needed the human sacrifices to eat, so they were hungry during the flood. All sorts of discrepancies. Was Noach saved because of his tzidkus or not? Or whoever was saved, right? So the differences all reflect, basically, the philosophy of the Torah versus the philosophy of Avodah Zarah. So Memela, in their accounts, it's going to tell the story, but with their biases. And that's sort of exactly what the Ramban says about the Nabataean agriculture. It's the same story, but it presents their biases. So that's what the Ramban says. Even if what actually happened was what the Medrash describes, it makes sense why that detail of the story would be omitted or changed in their story, because that would undermine their credibility. And the same thing over here. The details of the stories that would be problematic for an idolatrous theology are changed, even though the crux of the story stayed the same. So it's interesting. It's interesting, something that I noticed this afternoon. Okay, have a good night. I'll pick up next week. Bezras Hashem.